The sounds of the Bayside, 88.3 Southern FM.
Where you're listening to the Space Show. Well, we're going to begin with, hopefully, some music by Vangelis. This is not our usual Motion of Stars, but is called Philae's Descent, because 5 years ago, well, Philae made its descent. Welcome to the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I am Andrew Rennie. And on this evening's The Space Show, space news, which includes a controversial finding about the nature of our universe. Also, the Apollo 12 50th anniversary, and, as you're hearing now, the fifth anniversary of the landing by Philae on comet Churyumov-Gerasimenko. Exciting stuff there, landing by Philae on the comet. Well, you may remember that on New Year's Day this year, the New Horizons spacecraft flew past a Kuiper Belt object, an asteroid, if you will, called 2014 MU69. At that time, the New Horizons science team unofficially called the 34-kilometer-wide body Ultima Thule. Now, this most distant object ever visited by a spacecraft has an official name. It is Arrokoth. And that term means sky in the extinct language of the Algonquian people of the Chesapeake region of North America. And here's how the announcement went at NASA headquarters.
There's a certificate on the front. Says to commemorate the naming of asteroid Arrokoth on 2019 November 12th by the International Astronomical Union and the Minor Planet Center for asteroid 486958 2014 MU69. This name is honor of the Powhatan tribes with the following citation. Now, this is the official piece of text that we submitted along with the name, and you'll be able to find that on the web once it's finally officially released. Arrakoth is the word for sky from the Powhatan language of native people from the Chesapeake Bay region. Institutions in this region played a prominent role in facilitating the discovery and exploration of this ancient and distant object.
Okay, now let's go on to our space show anniversary. And this is the fifth anniversary of the landing of Philae on the comet Churyumov-Gerasimenko. It was launched from the Rosetta spacecraft, which in turn had been launched from Earth in 2004. And then on November 12th of 2014, Philae was detached to make a landing. The overall mission ended in 2016 on September the 20th. So we're going to start with a song about it. It's by Kathleen Martin, and it is called simply Transistor Sister. Woodpecker sound that you're hearing are the plasma recordings from the Rosetta spacecraft. Rosetta after these station messages.
From Sandringham to South Yarra, you're listening to Southern FM.
Where this is the Space Show, and we're celebrating the fifth anniversary of the landing by Philae on the comet.
Hi, my name is Koen Geerts. I'm the Rosetta Lander Philae Technical Project Manager, and I'm working at the German Aerospace Center DLR in Cologne. Today I'll be explaining a little bit about Rosetta Lander Philae. What you're currently seeing is Philae in the on-comet configuration, but at the moment Philae is still attached to Rosetta in its cruise configuration. This means that the three landing gear legs that you're seeing are retracted and folded towards the main body. At the moment of landing, what will happen is several hours before landing, Philae will be separated from Rosetta. It means that Rosetta will push Philae off. Some point during the descent, the landing gear will be unfolded. This will allow for the legs to deploy and Philae is ready to land. Philae is supposed to touch down, of course, first with its feet. In particular, is the Philae ice screw. All three feet have one of these eye screws that is integrated as part of the general foot, which will be penetrating the comet's surface, depending on surface hardness, of course, only driven by the impact of the touchdown. And what will happen is the eye screw will rotate and penetrate into the surface in order to fix Philae onto the surface. All three feet also have a scientific experiment integrated. In the soles, there are transmitters and receivers as functioning as a seismographic instrument. So the feet will be able to communicate from one to the other, transmitting sounds from one feet to the other, but also to listen to the comet and see if the comet, if there is any cracking or any other seismic activity. So as you can imagine, the comet gravitational attraction is not very high. So there's actually the risk that Philae bounces off the comet's surface in case there is a relatively hard impact. Of course, this is not something that we want, so we took some measures to avoid this. And one of them is a harpoon. Philae actually has two harpoons mounted on the landing gear that will be shot into the comet upon the touchdown signal, and they will penetrate the comet, depending on its hardness, up to 2 meters. A cable is attached to the harpoon that will be rolled back and tighten the lander onto the comet's surface. In addition to the two harpoons, Philae has another device available to make sure that it will not bounce off the comet's surface. And this is a thruster, which is mounted on top of Philae in order to thrust Philae onto the comet's surface. It will ignite at the touchdown, and it will thrust for about 1 minute after touchdown. Philae cannot directly communicate with Earth. So for communication, we heavily rely on the Rosetta orbiter to relay information from Philae back to Earth, but also commanding from Earth towards Philae. And for this purpose, Philae has a radio frequency transmitter and receiver mounted on the top, so that when Rosetta is passing and flying over Philae, a communication link can be established and the information can be exchanged. Relaying information from Rosetta back to Earth will take about half an hour of signal travel time. So everything which is happening on the comet will be known on Earth only about half an hour later. One of the Philae instruments is a drill. The drill has the capability to drill up into the comet's surface up to about 30 centimeters. And the tip of the drill has a sampling device that will be able to sample little comet parts. After sampling, the drill retracts back into the Philae main body with the sample inside, which is then deployed into small ovens which are mounted behind the drill and can then be rotated under different instruments so that the properties of the sample can be determined. So why are we taking comet surface samples? Well, simply because you want to learn and know what comets are made of. So the drill can of course take samples at different depths, but in addition, Philae has the capability to rotate its body for the full 360 degrees, which allows the drill to take samples at different locations. The instrument is a comet thermometer, which at the moment is located inside the main body of Philae, and some point after landing, it will be deployed onto the comet's surface through this mechanical deployment system, what is the moment when it's just about to be hammered into the comet's surface. And this is done through this hammering device on the top of the thermometer. There's an electromagnetic device inside which will lift this weight up and down, and through this movement it will hammer the long thermometer, it's about 30 centimeters, completely into the comet. I'm sure that you, just like us, are very interested to see what the comet's surface actually looks like in detail. And for this reason, Philae has 7 panoramic cameras mounted around the body, which will give Philae the possibility to take a full 360-degree panorama image of the surface near to Philae, up to the horizon, perhaps even a little bit of space, and that is then used to look into detail what the comet looks like. In addition to the panoramic cameras, there's also a camera mounted on the bottom of Philae, which will take images whilst we are descending with increasing resolution, while we're getting closer and closer to the comet's surface, which will give unprecedented images never seen before. Philae is also equipped with an additional set of antennas that are not used to communicate with Rosetta, but are part of an instrument which is located both on Philae but also on the Rosetta orbiter. And the two instruments, the two antennas, communicate with each other, not when Rosetta is in sight, but when Rosetta is at the other side of the comet with respect to Philae, and the radio waves are traveling through the comet so that we can derive the properties of the inside of the comet. The mass of Philae is about 100 kilograms, and Philae is equipped with batteries in order to provide energy during the descent and just after landing. But in addition, solar panels are located all around the main body and on top of Philae in order to operate, hopefully for several months, on the comet's surface.
Before the landing, a press conference was held.
Jean-Pierre Martin, Société Astronomique de France. I thought at the beginning we were talking about a landing sequence of about 2 hours. Now it's 7 hours. Do we change the altitude for the separation? And if you allow me a second question, very short. What if Rosetta is not in view of Philae? Do we store the information on Philae? Sorry.
Okay,
thank you.
I can take this. So I start with one, and indeed some years ago we were anticipating shorter descent times. Now for each of the landing zones, actually we have studied 2 scenarios how to land. And it has to do with the mechanism which separates the lander from the orbiter, which has a nominal mechanism which can be adjusted to the delta V, so the velocity the lander is pushed back in orbit to fall down. And there is also a redundant system which is based on a spring. And this spring device has been designed still for the Virtanen case, a much smaller comet. So this velocity is in the range of 18 centimeters per second. And whenever we try to have a scenario where the spring mechanism is a real redundancy to the nominal mechanism, we have to separate the lander from a higher altitude and we end up with a longer descent time. That's why these 7 hours in case of landing site J, which is kind of a drawback as compared to the maximum push-off device, but it increases the robustness of the separation itself. Yeah. Your second question was? Yes. The lander itself has a central computer, including a mass memory, so we can store the data on board of the lander until there is visibility again with the orbiter to dump them. Obviously, we cannot only have a limited amount of data. So one of the criteria for the landing site selection was that the geometry, as compared to the orbit of the orbiter, allows regular visibilities to get the data to the orbiter and then back to Earth.
Hi, I'm Cyril Van Abel from Le Figaro in Paris. On a flight dynamics point of view, you said you were doing some modeling of the shape of the comet and trying to compare with actual observations with the high resolution cameras. Could you tell us what results you have on the precision of your trajectory?
Yep, now it's released. There are two issues for in flying a spacecraft like this. One is the capability to reconstruct the past. So it was what we call orbit reconstruction, and to know where we were. In this, we are relatively precise. We go down to a few tens of meters in being able to reconstruct where the spacecraft was, for example, when it shot an image or so on. A totally different business is to predict where we will be, so the orbit predictability. This is strictly linked to the models we have of the comet, the gravity model, the shape model, the knowledge of the landmarks we use as reference point, but mainly the knowledge of the aerodynamic environment around the comet. The comet is coming out from the comet. Olga's picture already showed that there is gas coming out. This is impinging on the surfaces of the spacecraft and is blowing the spacecraft away from its trajectory. So to predict this is much more difficult. Currently, I don't deny that we see these effects, but we are not in a position to discriminate them completely from the gravitational forces. So in predicting the orbit, we are still less accurate than in reconstructing. And we will not improve because the comet activity will further improve over the year. And this is the big difficulty of Rosetta, is to be able to predict. So in this is also linked to the performance of the spacecraft itself. To fly this type of orbits we are flying, we continuously maneuver the spacecraft, and the maneuvers done with the thrusters, with the propellant, they are not perfect. There is a certain inaccuracy in executing them. This also introduces a source of error that might sound very small, but with the very small orbital velocity we have around the comet, this can expand to a few hundred meters of couple of kilometers, and when we are flying at 30 kilometers distance or 20, then can be significant. So our capability to predict the orbit is definitely lower than the capability to reconstruct the orbit, and is in the order of a kilometer or so.
Jonathan Amos, BBC. I wanted to ask about the possibilities for a dress rehearsal, but first just to push this if I can, Fred and Stefano, 70% if it was a rounded object. I mean, what's your best estimate now that we've got this duck shape and you've got to get down on it when you wake in the middle of the night in a deep sweat? What do you think? What are the chances? Are they better than 50-50?
Well, I don't sweat at night, not at all. This is such an easy mission. Well, as I said before, we only have the original estimates. We are not going back to nickel and dime on all the potential uncertainties. It would take a lot of time, and it would only give us an under number. I have no real number in mind of what it is today. And we will do, as I said, we will do our very best to optimize all our processes to get as close as possible to the original number. And that's all I can tell you.
And the issue of a dress rehearsal?
Yeah, maybe I take this one. We definitely consider this option. Unfortunately, there are some drawbacks because of the trajectories we have to fly around the comet. In order to be able to deliver the lander successfully, we have to fly relatively fast in front of the comet. And this brings the spacecraft again on hyperbolic orbit, so we are not bound anymore to the gravity of the comet, and it takes quite some time to get back. So if we were to do a dress rehearsal, first we would engage a lot of time, so, and this is very precious for the other instruments and for the lander itself. We would do this operation at a later stage with higher chances of having a comet that is more active. The second thing is What dress rehearsal can bring to us is knowledge about the accuracy on the navigation of the spacecraft. But if we do something a day, it doesn't mean that 3 weeks later we will have the same conditions from the coma of the comet, the activity level. So we traded it off and we decided in the end not to implement. Of course, on ground, with the tools we have on ground, we have simulated all this phase. We had Philae talking to the spacecraft models that we have on ground, and this is all validated on ground.
Unfortunately, Philae bounced and was lost for quite some time. Now, after the misfortune, they had this press conference.
Paul Doherty from the Exploratorium. And for Catherine, so you, Philae bounced on the surface, and or maybe for Jean-Pierre, Philae bounced on the surface, kicking up dust. did the instruments detect what the dust was made of and then get a different answer when it was 100 meters above the surface?
Okay, I'm not Catherine, but still. Okay. Most of the results we have now are from COSAC and Ptolemy are the analysis of the material which has been collected after the rebouncing. And actually, we can measure the difference in the material collected after all the bouncings, and because we did several measurements afterwards, and the higher was after the first one. So yes, we consider that most of the result that you will see soon come from the analysis of what was on the top surface, blocked in the ovens, and then analysed. And so the answer to your question, whether or not that's different from what Rosina has found, we will know soon when we have completed the analysis there. Obviously, there are things which are identical, like the CO2, for example. Even the ratio of CO2 might be different, and so we'll see whether or not the CO2 comes from CO or conversely. So, yes, we have the answer to that, I think, I hope, soon. Take your
On the Say Things to Space show, we have been looking back 5 years to the landing of Philae on comet Churyumov-Gerasimenko. It was lost, but eventually found. On next week's The Space Show, we're looking at the 50th anniversary of Apollo 12. Apollo 12, of course, was the second human landing on the moon.